we kick things off this afternoon by welcoming into the show an actor who has been making movies and television shows for over 50 years now, for goodness sakes. He's an actor, a director, perhaps known best for his role as Eric Stratton, Otter in Animal House, and as the Vice President of the United States, John Hoynes, in The West Wing, a role which earned him 2 Emmy Award nominations. We're pleased to be joined this afternoon by actor-director Tim Matheson. So much I want to talk about with you. You know, we could go a couple hours here, but I think you probably have better things to do. But before we talk about your career as an actor and director, I have to tell you, I'm a huge fan. I think you're one of the best follows on Twitter. And I feel comfortable. Well, I feel comfortable asking this question. If the current occupant of the White House was a character in Animal House, would he be Niedermeyer? Would he be Greg Marmalade? Would he be Chip Diller? Or would he just be the back end of Dean Wormer's horse?
That's a great question. I think there's a lot of Niedermeyer in him, and I think that's pretty close to it, I think. That and the back end of the horse.
Yeah, we have no question about that. Well, you've had such a long and successful career. Am I right that the first TV gig you got was in a Robert Young series that came after Father Knows Best?
That's correct. It was called Window on Main Street, and it was an anthology series. It was basically about a writer that lived in a small town or gone back to his small town to sort of, you know, find material to write about. And so it was, you know, a different story every week about interesting characters. And it was one of those shows that didn't find its audience, got canceled, but they still made 39 episodes. That was back in the day when that was a season, they had 39 episodes.
Ever since we mentioned that you were going to be on the show, it's amazing to me how many people have reached out to me and said, ask him about Johnny Quest. So what was that experience like? Where were you, 16 when you did that?
Yeah, I think I auditioned for it when I was 15. And, you know, it was one of those, just, it was some audition. I went and I did it and didn't hear anything for months, and then got a call that they were doing the pilot, and then we did the pilot, didn't hear anything for months, and then heard it sold. And it was a perfect transition for me because it was that point where I was growing out of being a kid actor, and yet I was not a young adult actor, and there wasn't that many parts for me, so I just did a lot of, you know, the voice work, and I fell into it for about three or four or five years, and it was a really wonderful period of my life because there were such good actors who were doing it. They were all from radio back in the day, and, you know, had been theater actors, and tremendous, and I got to work with Mel Blanc and Dawes Butler and Don Messick, who were stars in the animation world.
We've heard so many stories about young actors who never made that transition successfully and had all kinds of problems. What was that transition like for you to go from child star to older adolescent to adult actor?
Well, you know, I think for me, I was lucky. I wasn't a child star. I was just sort of like the third kid through the door, and, you know, I was an actor who did a day here, a couple of lines there, and, you know, I did a pilot, I would do commercial. I just would do literally almost anything that came up. And once I got sort of towards the end of my high school year, I think I did a movie called Divorce American Style with Dick Van Dyke and Debbie Reynolds. I think I was a junior becoming a senior in high school, and then I think that was it, or was I graduating? And then the next year I did Yours, Mine, and Ours with Lucille Ball and Henry Fonda. And so that sort of kicked off my young adulthood acting. So that, you know, in between, it was good for me to be doing voice work and seeing that that was the real pro side of Hollywood. These actors were huge celebrities within the, you know, community, and they worked all the time, and extremely talented and extremely professional, and it just showed me really another side of it and what it took to be an actor. And you have to really practice your craft, be prepared. And so it helped me bridge that gap. But I didn't have that problem to overcome where I was starring a big star in a TV show, and then all of a sudden that dries up and you sort of transition. And I think I was lucky for it.
The first celebrity I think I ever met in my life, I was a little kid, and James Drury came to town here to be Grand Marshal of a parade. And you were on the last season of The Virginian, right?
That's correct, yeah. Yeah, it was fun. I mean, I think I had just turned 18, 19, and the Virginian, no, I was 19, I guess, it was my first series, you know, and it was so much fun, and they were such great guys. Drury was just the real pro, and Doug McClure and Jeanette Nolan, John McIntyre, there was a whole infrastructure in Hollywood of wranglers and horsemen and stuntmen and actors that did westerns, and I, fortunately, in the sort of tail end of that era, got to work with many and all of them, you know. It was really fun.
Well, yeah, you rolled right into Griff on Bonanza with that crew.
That's right. Yeah, I did. And then I did two or three episodes on How the West Was Won, and the Apple Dumpling Gang rides again. You know, so I did. I mean, and they don't make shows like that anymore. They're starting to make a few westerns again. But, you know, it was just... And really, on those kinds of shows, you'd work with all the same crew and people that you had already worked with. So it was like old home week.
We're talking with Tim Matheson here on Downtown. Well, let's move to Animal House. Eric Stratton, is it wrong that to this day, when I meet somebody, I'm tempted to say, Eric Stratton, Rush Chairman, damn glad to meet you?
It's one of the just many, many lines from that, from... movie, from all the different characters, that resonates for people. You know mine's bigger. Hey, you effed up, you trusted us, you know. I mean, there's so many different characters and memorable moments from that movie that it remains a classic. And you know, I must say that it sort of remains a part of the curriculum for all new college students. I don't think that many kids go to school without having seen Animal House, or see it at least when they get there, like my kids did.
40 years ago, the movie came up, but you guys had a hard time finding a college that was willing to serve as the locale, right?
Yeah, nobody wanted to let them in. I mean, they asked everybody, and I think this was a last resort, and this, the dean, who's still alive, I hear he's 95 now, he had turned down another movie and gotten a lot of flack for it because it was a famous movie, was The Graduate. And so he just said to himself, well, I don't know anything about reading a script. So he read Animal House and he said, well, I can't make heads nor tails of this, so we'll just let him shoot here. Well, we were very fortunate, and I think it actually helped our movie because it was, you know, out of the mainstream. It looked like an Ivy, but it was up in Eugene, Oregon, and, you know, we were sort of under the radar, you know, as it was. And the kids, the students there were great. They were very friendly and nice to us. And they all adored John Belushi, which gave us a hint of how successful this could be if we did a decent movie, you know.
You're the third cast member from Animal House we've had on our show. Karen Allen and Stephen Bishop have been on with us. But my gosh, you look at that cast. So many people. I mean, you've been in the business for quite a while at that point, but people like Kevin Bacon, Tom Hulce, my gosh, James Widows, Bruce McGill, who might be the only guy who works as much as you do these days. It's incredible.
Bruce is such a good actor, and he's very busy, and it's an old buddy of mine. And Widows, you know, Widows has become, Jamie Widows played Hoover. He's become a huge TV director.
Right.
Does, you know, Mom and most of Chuck Lorre's shows. And I remember the first dinner we had when all the Deltas arrived a week early, and we sat down to dinner with the night Belushi came in, and Landis and his wife were there, Deborah Nadulman, the costume designer, and all our cast. And it was, I looked around that table and I just thought, man, oh man, this is a good group. I mean, because they were real actors. These guys, McGill was off, you know, been off Broadway and done Shakespeare, and Holtz was, you know, been in other movies and was a theater actor, and everybody. And then Belushi couldn't have been nicer and more supportive. And this was my first comedy. And Jamie Widows, he'd been on Broadway, and Riegert was an improv actor. So everybody had their chops, you know. And I felt a little at sea because I had never done a comedy before. But I must say, everybody was so supportive and generous and to me especially Belushi, that it just made me feel like, oh, I do know what I'm doing. So it's going to be great.
Well, I'm of that age that my sense of humor was greatly shaped and warped, you might say, by the National Lampoon. I know you were a fan because you end up buying the Lampoon for a while. Can you talk a little bit about one of my comedy heroes, Doug Kenny?
Oh, geez. Yeah, Doug. Doug was, I think, the sung or unsung hero of Animal House, you know, and sort of, because he was the founder of the National Lampoon from the Harvard Lampoon, and he and a guy named Henry Beard founded it, and Henry sort of stayed off by himself, but Doug wanted to do movies, and he got together with Harold Ramis and Chris Miller, and they wrote Animal House, and then Doug was there with Chris on location playing parts, and Doug was actually he played Stork, actually has a couple of lines in the movie, and he's quite, you know, quite the presence, and just the funniest, smartest guy I think I've ever met. You know, he was wonderful. He was always very supportive and giving, and was always there every day. And it was just kind of, he was our spiritual leader, you know, and you wanted to make him happy with what we were doing, but he just was great. I saw him. I accidentally ran into him in Hawaii the week before he died, and the weekend that Caddyshack came out, which he also wrote. And he was despondent because Caddyshack wasn't as big a success as Animal House. And I just assured him that, you know, this is a great movie. They're not going to be two in a row like Animal House, you know, but so Animal House was a home run. This is a double or a triple, so don't worry about it. I mean, it's like, it's okay. But, you know, Doug was, he was also in the grips of, I think, a bit of drug use, and I think that caught up with him. So we lost him I think he was on Kauai. He either fell or stumbled or jumped or something off of a ledge of a cliff and it didn't survive.
We're talking with Tim Matheson. Hey, let's skip ahead to an iconic role in one of the great series of all time, Vice President John Hoynes in The West Wing. Is that a treat for an actor to be able to go out there and take on those words of Aaron Sorkin and that dynamic?
Oh, boy. Yeah, you know, you dream about that. I mean, every week we'd sit down and read the script at the, you know, the read-through, and you'd think, wow, this just, you know, it doesn't get any better than this. And then the next week you'd sit down and read another script, and it would just be even better, more in-depth, more intelligent, more fun, more, you know, complex. And, yeah, it was a real treat. And that cast was, not unlike Animal House, was one of the finest groups of people I've ever performed with. I mean, one after the other were just at the top of their game. And if you look around now, they still are. And it was one of those things that one of my favorite actors was John Spencer, who's gone now.
Yeah.
But I would, you know, I was recurring. I wasn't there every week. And then I was off doing other things. And sometimes I'd come in and they'd combine all my material into one or two days just as a favor to get me back to where I was working. And, you know, I'd jump back in. And it's very dense material and very tricky. And if you weren't letter perfect, word for word and comma and punctuation mark perfect, they'd do another take. So it was very unlike other shows. And so it was a little nervous making when you came in after you'd been away. And all I remember was whenever I had a scene with John Spencer at the beginning, I'd just look at John, I'd relax because he was so real and so good that it just sucked you right into the scene and made you be inside the scene well, you wouldn't be worried about it because you were playing the character, and it would just be totally, totally reassuring and totally, you know, stabilizing for me. And but it was a great experience, and I think I got nominated for 2 Emmys. I didn't win, but
right?
It was. Yeah, it was one of the most wonderful experiences I've had.
It's interesting. People talk about a potential reboot of West Wing. Aaron Sorkin has said he's not interested in that. And then that I'm amazed now. I mean, I have such wonderful memories of that show. And I'm a bleeding heart liberal, but I don't see it as a liberal show. I see it as a hopeful show that tells us the government can actually work if people talk to each other.
Well, are you right? And that's well said. I mean, it. You know, we all knew where our politics were, but because I mean, he was it was a liberal administration, but you know, they never played Republicans as the villains, and it was about the humanity of the people,
right?
And so I think that it was a bygone era that you look around now, and the things that these guys are doing. From the Senate to the Congress and to the House of Representatives on, it's just shameful, you know, that they've forgotten their mandate is to protect and defend the Constitution and support the people of the United States. I mean, but they get lost in their political agendas.
You've spent a lot of time in the last several years directing a number of shows, Psych, Criminal Minds, A Person of Interest. Does it give you an added advantage to have the acting experience when you get behind the camera?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, because you're sort of there as a coach, you know, and if they're, you know, and you're just giving them the objective opinion, you know, that, okay, you can get a laugh here, you can do this there, if you stop here, give it a pause, you know, and it's, I'm not there to teach anybody how to do it, and I'm not there to, you know, I just remember as an actor, I'd be in certain shows or movies, and I would have, you know, remember, I'd look back after it was done and go, I really nailed that character. And then if I go and see the show, it was like, oh, it didn't really look like it was that good, you know, because of the placement of the camera, the way it was directed. And then I remember in certain movies, I'd say, I didn't really nail it. But then you go look at the movie, because it was so well directed, the camera was in the right place, you'd look better than you did, you had performed. So I realized it's the director. And I just was, when I direct, I'm just there to make the actors look as good as they can and make the characters as multidimensional as possible and deliver what the author wanted, you know. So, sometimes actors get that, sometimes they don't, you know. And so, and we're a delicate crowd to deal with, so you have to... You have to be politic about it, but it's so much fun. I mean, it's so much fun being behind the camera. I just love it.
And you worked both as a director and were a cast member with friend of our show, Bruce Campbell, on Burn Notice. Ah, I have to think that was an enjoyable experience working with him.
Yes. And you know what? I mean, because working with him and Jeffrey Donovan, they're both such talented actors and good directors, too. That whenever I do a scene, I'd look at him and say, "What do you think? We do it again? Do it? What do you think?" And it was so—it was like we were all on the same page, and we were all excited about doing that show. And they were so great in that show. And Dead Larry was was one of my favorite characters, I think.
You played Ronald Reagan in Killing Reagan. Was there an effort by you to make sure? You always try to get it right, but even more so. To get it right when this is a guy whose politics you didn't agree with necessarily.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I studied as much about him as I could. I was constantly reading books about and of and by him, looking at clips of his speeches and his debates and his press conferences and et cetera. And then I remembered when I had played JFK in a miniseries with Joanne Whalley and called Jackie O, I think it was, or Jackie Onassis. And I got so caught up in trying to sound and behave like J. JFK that I didn't think the performance was as multidimensional as I would have wanted it to be. I was more concentrated on just the accent and the sound of his voice and stuff. So with this, I decided I'd work as hard as much as I could, getting his accent and the vocal timbre and all that. And then I just let go of it. And I felt it worked to a greater degree, because really what we as actors do is try and illuminate what the soul and the heart of the character is. And that's what I went for, and it felt better to me, and I thought it worked better for me. And the response I've gotten from it was, you know, extremely positive, and so I think that just that slight difference in approach made me happier as an actor, for sure.
Yeah, Tim, you've talked in the past a little bit about how working with Kurt Russell influenced your thinking about the phases of a showbiz career and mm-hmm. the need to keep finding ways to keep that fresh. Does that become harder or more simple as your career continues on?
It's always hard. I always used to joke that when I was a director and I'm a director and an actor, so I've got two careers that people are trying to keep me unemployed in, you know, constantly. You know, but there was also another thing that Kurt said I thought was really, you know, he's just such a great guy, and he, you know, was a former athlete and a great skier and hockey player and, you know, an all-around good guy, is that he once told me, we were in Hawaii, we were doing an episode of Hawaii Five-0 together after we had done The Quest, and we both said, hey, let's go to Hawaii and do this together, it'll be fun. And I remember we were jogging at the beach, we were staying at the same hotel, we were jogging at the beach, and we were doing laps in the sand, you know, run up to the beach chair and then turn around and run back 100 yards, then back 100 yards and back and forth. And he just said one thing to me that I've never forgotten as an athlete. He said, always sprint the last lap the hardest. No matter what you do when you're running, when you're running, whatever my last lap is, my last leg is, I'll just flat out run that as hard as I can. I give it all in the last one. And it sort of resonated for me, because that's what a professional athlete has to do. You always have to have a little something in reserve, and then you have to just leave it all on the field, you know. And I think that it also speaks well about how you approach your career and how you approach your day's work and things like that. You know, there's a lot of sort of really deeper thought going on for athletics and for any kind of craft that you're involved in. So I must say that, you know, just hanging with Kurt, you learn something new every day just to enjoy yourself while you're doing it, too. That was the key.
That's great advice right there. I was thinking of this the other night watching the Emmys. It's for consumers of television. These are pretty heady times because there are so many platforms now with cable, with streaming services. What about for actors and directors? Does it provide more opportunities, or is it easy to get lost in the crowd when there's so much out there?
I don't know. I think that there are a lot of more opportunities. What I think where you can get lost is you get into different sort of eras and phases of your career, and you get into certain different age groups, you know. And there's more parts, and sometimes there's less parts. I find as I get older that, you know, the parts change, and the challenges aren't there. And sometimes, but I find that it's home to me to be on a set. And I grew up and you know, through thick and thin and good times and bad times, that's been the place I've always gone to. And the crew and the other actors, they're my family, and so it's always been a place of comfort and solace for me and fun. And so you know, and you never, as an actor, you never quite know what's next in line. So it's just in many ways like sports. You just got to keep yourself in game shape. And then you get a call and they say, come on up, you're going to the bigs, you know? So who knows? You never know what's going to happen. So you just got to go with it.
Tim, thank you so much. I really have enjoyed your work through the years, and so good to talk with you. Thanks for visiting with us today.
Rich, thank you very much. Great to talk to you.